So we're just showing those brief videos on Sunday mornings to remind us of our fall sermon series. We're calling it Mission Impossible. We're saying thank you, Tom Cruise, for letting us use that music in our video and even that iconic picture of him in that Mission Impossible movie. And we're trying to make a little link from those, from that music and from Mission Impossible, and talking about the Mission Impossible that Jesus has given the church community. I just watched this past week a recent film, First Man, which made me think about another seemingly impossible mission that people were working on to get someone to the moon. And in some similar way, that is our focus again this morning. This impossible mission that Jesus has given the church. We read about it in the book of Acts. We call it sometimes the Acts of the Apostles, but really it is the Acts of Jesus, the Acts of Jesus through his Spirit and through his apostles, through his church, sending the church into the world. And I'm suggesting it is the ministry to continue the mission of Jesus. So not just telling people about Jesus, but actually continuing the ministry of Jesus. And this morning, in a few moments, we're going to read two passages, and especially the second passage raises the question, what happens when people who are part of the mission and ministry that Jesus gave the church are having a tough time getting along? I want to acknowledge this morning that I shared this passage, the second passage we're going to read this morning, with the seniors group on Tuesday morning. And what I sometimes do is I just read the passage and I just look for people to respond to it, which I think is one of the best ways for us to interact with the Bible. And the seniors group is always very willing and ready to give inputs. I can't footnote all their comments, but a number of their comments from Tuesday morning are sprinkled throughout this morning's message. I just have to say generically, thank you very much, seniors group, for your help this morning in the message. But let me invite Patty Lou to come up this morning and to read from Psalm 133 and then some verses from Acts chapter 15.
Good morning. Psalm 133. How good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. It is like precious oil poured on the head, running down the beard, running down on Aaron's beard, down upon the collar of his robes. It is as if the dew of Hermon were falling on Mount Zion. For there the Lord bestows his blessing, even life forevermore. And now over to Acts. Acts chapter 15, verse 36 to the end of the chapter. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, "Let's go back and visit the brothers in all the towns where we preached the word of the Lord and see how they're doing." Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark, with them, but Paul did not think it was wise to take him because he had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement, they parted company. Barnabas took Mark and sailed off to Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the brothers to the grace of the Lord, and he went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Now, especially that second passage is a short story, very short, about these two church leaders, Paul and Barnabas, and I want you to think of them as good guys, right? They are people, leaders, both of them very committed to the way of Jesus, both of them very able, competent, respected leaders, but they have this, what are we going to call it? Fight? Disagreements? Something's not, you know, they can't seem to land together on this idea to take this guy named John Mark on this journey, and they can't seem to get past it. It gets in the way of their upcoming plans. And it's so serious that as far as we know, it's a falling out. As far as I know in the New Testament, Paul and Barnabas never get back together again. Now I know, at least I think I know, that for a number of us, when we read the Bible on Sunday mornings, there is a distance. Right? Who was Paul? Who was Barnabas? What is Syria? Etc., etc., etc. This was written 2,000 years ago. How is this applicable to us today? I don't understand this. So this morning, I'm going to try something a little different. I'm going to try and tell a story that I'm hoping might help us understand the dynamics between Paul and Barnabas, not just in these few verses, but sort of their relationship together, and then where this conflict fits into the bigger relationship, the bigger story. So I'm going to tell a story. It's going to take a little while to tell the story. It is a purely fictional story. Any resemblance to real people or real names is purely coincidental. I have no one in mind as I tell this story. But imagine with me, if you can, the following, and I'm going to hopefully it's going to help us think about Paul and Barnabas. So I want you to think about the great country of Brazil. Yes. Thank you as well for the country of Brazil here at Nelson Avenue. I want you to think about someone who was born and grew up in this amazing country. I'm just going to call him this morning Samuel. Or Samuel. Totally fictional person. I have no one in mind as I put that picture up, or as Larry does, as I say his name. And this person, this totally fictional person, Samuel, he is a soccer fan. He loves to watch soccer. He loves to think about soccer. In fact, Samuel lives in a city in Brazil that, as far as I know, is soccer crazy. And not just is he a soccer fan, not just is he soccer crazy, but Samuel is the craziest soccer fan you will ever meet. There is no soccer fan more crazy, more dedicated, more committed, more zealous than Samuel. In fact, he is so crazy, he is so dedicated, he is so zealous that he is feared by other soccer teams, other soccer fans. Like, there's no fan that's as crazy as Samuel. But then one day, almost as if out of the blue, he suddenly moves to Canada. And believe it or not, he starts cheering for the Canadian soccer team and becomes the craziest, most dedicated, most zealous soccer fan for the Canadian soccer team. There is no one more committed, no one more focused, no one more zealous than Samuel cheering for the Canadian soccer team. Now, the soccer fans in Canada who are cheering for the Canadian team are a little skeptical, right? Because he used to be cheering for the Brazilian team, but now he's cheering for the Canadian team. So can we trust him? Is this legit? Is he just pretending? And then, sort of in this moment of what are we going to do with Samuel? Can we believe him? Along comes this, what we're going to call, a kind Canadian. This morning, I'm going to call him KC. Kind Canadian. And KC says, Samuel is legit. Samuel is the real deal. Yes, he used to be In Brazil, he was cheering for the Brazilian team, but now he is really authentically, genuinely cheering for the Canadian soccer team. He's okay. He's one of us. We can trust him. And so largely because of KC, the Canadian soccer fans welcome and embrace Samuel. And so much so that in the course of time, the Canadian soccer fans say, we need more people to hear about the Canadian soccer team. We're sending KC and Samuel on a promotional journey all the way to Edmonton and back. So 2,500 kilometers, 1,250 there and 1,250 back. And Samuel and KC, maybe not quite hand in hand, but they start walking most of the way. Sometimes they get a ride from someone, but most of the way they're walking to Edmonton and walking back, stopping in places, telling people about the Canadian soccer team and encouraging people, please cheer for our team. Now, as they begin their trip, they decide to take along a young man named Vitor. Now, I have no one specifically in mind when I say that name. But this young man named Vitor, he starts with them, but then as they're moving kind of east and then northeast toward Edmonton, sort of around Hope or Agassiz, Vitor says, bye-bye. I'm going back to Richmond. I'm not going with you all the way to Edmonton. But Samuel and KC together, all the way to Edmonton, all the way back. And then because of that, the soccer fans are sort of so impressed by them, they say, you have to be our delegates to a huge FIFA meeting happening very soon. And as Samuel and KC go to that FIFA meeting, the decision that that meeting's about impacts FIFA soccer for the next at least 2,000 years. Now, as I tell this story, and I can't tell all the details, everything that happened between Samuel and KC, but I'm hoping that you get a sense that they both love soccer, right? They both love the Canadian soccer team. They are together a great team. Like, they have synergy. They're tight. They work well together. They go on this epic promotional tour together. They have this part in this huge decision that impacts soccer for at least 2,000 years. And then they want to go on another tour. And KC says, well, let's ask Vitor to go with us again. And Samuel says, no way. KC says, yes way. Samuel says, no way. KC says, yes way. Samuel says, no way. Now, I'm hoping a few of you are sensing, that's kind of a silly thing to be upset about, isn't it? And that's a little bit what I'm trying to show you this morning. These two who were so tight and so effective in their promotional tour at the FIFA meeting, as they start thinking about whether we take along Vitor again, they get into this, well, what are we going to call it? Is it a fight? Disagreement for sure. This row. This seesaw battle. Yes, no, yes, no. And the disagreement between Samuel and KC is so strong that their friendship and their relationship is no more. Now, I'm hoping you're tracking with me. I'm trying to use this story, purely fictional story, to talk about this morning's passage. It's actually a lot like Paul and Barnabas. Paul, a.k.a. Samuel, used to be, at one point, not another country, but he was against Jesus and against the church. Very zealous against Jesus and against the church. And then Because Jesus shows up in his life, he joins the Christian movement. He becomes part of the Jesus people, the disciples of Jesus. But the Christians, they don't believe it. Like, is this possible? Could someone like Paul become a Christian? Can we believe him? Can we trust him? And Barnabas, we read in Acts chapter 9, that when Paul came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples. I'm one of you. But they were all afraid of him, not believing he was really a disciple. But Barnabas, Acts 9, Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. Right? Almost like, this guy is legit. This guy is real. I'm going to vouch for him. I believe him, and you should believe him as well. And then later on in Acts chapter 11, we have a sense, or at least we're told, Barnabas was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and faith. And a great number of people were brought to the Lord, brought to Jesus. Then Barnabas went to Tarsus. That's where Saul is from. He's become a Christian, but he's back in his hometown. He goes looking for Saul. When he finds him, he brings him to Antioch. The idea is, I want you to do ministry with me in Antioch. And as I think about Paul and Barnabas and their relationship, they also are together effective as a team. In Antioch, on their missionary journey together, there's synergy between them. They work together in the church at Antioch for a while. They travel together 2,500 kilometers, which I think, you know, typically you travel with someone that long, especially if you're mostly walking or it's kind of a slow travel, like a road trip, rather long road trip, it either breaks you or it makes you. I think for Paul and Barnabas, it made them. They're delegates to this really important meeting, this church meeting in the earlier part of Acts 15. So there's so much that binds them together, so much they have in common, and yet, in our passage this morning, they are arguing. They are at odds. They can't seem to get beyond the question, should we take John Mark with us? And my sense on Tuesday, when I was sharing and asking the seniors for some input on this passage, I sensed from some of them that they were saying, something like this has happened to us, or something like this has happened to people we know, right? Either in the church or in their family or among their friends. Sometimes the thing that got in the way was rather big. Sometimes it was rather small. Sometimes it felt big at the moment, right? Like years ago, it felt like it was a big deal, but now we realize it really wasn't that big of a deal. At least it wasn't big enough to separate people. And the story of Paul and Barnabas, the schism that happens between them, the parting of the ways, for me is a story about our humanity, our frailty, our pride, our arrogance, our brokenness, our unwillingness to compromise, because I'm wondering, why didn't one of them say, okay, I could keep saying no, 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 but okay, let's just try your way. Or I could keep saying yes, 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 but okay, why don't I try it your way? Because there's so much between us. There's so much we have in common. And when I ask the question about Paul and Barnabas, I have to also maybe ask us, but I have to certainly ask myself, why have I not sought to compromise in my life? Why have there been moments in my life, and it started when I was already a kid, but I think about certain moments in my life where I haven't compromised. I haven't found a way. And the question for me is hard to explain. Like, why don't people say, I'm going to find a way. I'm going to find a compromise. And at least in my life, I can even feel myself, you know, 10 or 12 years old, something's happened between me and my parents. And I'm laying on my bed upstairs in our house, and I'm sulking. My mom comes, try to reconcile, try to do something, and I will have nothing of it. I feel bad even saying that, but I just remember that moment. And I wonder, why did that happen? Why did I not just say, okay, you know, let's try and make this work? And for me, the answer, although very difficult to say out loud, is that there are times I would rather be miserable than reconcile. I would rather be right than compromise. I would rather live in what seems like the darkness than live in the light. And all I can say is this is part of what it means for me to be human. Not all the time, but there are times where it seems like I choose the darkness and do not choose the light. And all I find in my heart, at least what I find myself saying these days when I think about that, is Jesus, help me. Jesus, help me. Because I can't seem to get my heart to want to do what I know is right. Now, I want to get to the rest of the story in a few moments, but I want to, for a few moments, think about if we could go back in time and talk to Paul and Barnabas. I know it's impossible. At least I think it's impossible. But if we could go back and say, Paul and Barnabas, you're having this disagreement. Could we help you? Could we offer you some tools to help you in this disagreement? I'm wondering if we could share something with them and maybe with more of us. So I'm going to invite Lori. She's one of our elders here at Nelson Avenue to try and answer questions around that. Lori has had training in conflict management or conflict resolution and is a good resource for us, but also maybe for Paul and Barnabas this morning.
So before I get super practical, I want to talk about just briefly why I care about conflict resolution and why I think we do as Christians. Because we do. Like, we care about conflict. When we are in conflict with someone who's important to us in our lives, who matters to us in our lives, it feels bad physically and emotionally and spiritually and mentally, round and round and round. So we do care about it, right? Why? I think the church answer, as opposed to like the neurological science or psychological answer, is because God cares about conflict and restoration. I would say he created the universe that way on purpose. He created us to be connected, not disconnected. So it's the heart of the gospel. The heart of the gospel is the restoration of relationships between God and his creation, between us and each other. It's designed into us for the sake of love. So, as we think about this kind of scenario that I think we're all really familiar with, that moment, that instance where we know something has broken, maybe a little bit, maybe a lot, but we know something has disconnected between ourselves and someone else. And we make a choice. We make a choice in the moment, and as the moments continue, will we engage? Will we not engage? If we do, how? So some of those kinds of situations could be something like just a disagreement of ideas. I think this about this thing, they think about this way. and we don't agree, that feels sometimes like a disconnect. Or there's something that someone else does that just makes me go, you know, like defensive, right? Makes me defensive, insulted. Someone else has done something and I'm reacting. And what we do is we tell ourselves a story in our head about what that person meant when they said that thing. I bet they're thinking this. I bet they think this about me. I bet this is why. And we build our case in our heads too, right? Especially if it feels more intense, if our reaction is more intense. Or maybe you're having a conversation about someone and sharing something that's like really important to you, an idea, a belief, a situation, and it's really important to you. And they don't really care about that the way that you care about that. They like don't get it. And you're like, but care, because this is important and I care. And they don't care. And it feels like they don't care about me. So there are lots of different scenarios, and we could probably stand here for an hour and talk about all the different kinds of situations that we might come into contact with. So what we're talking about today is, what do we do in that moment? What choice do we make? Do we engage? Do we not engage? And how? So some of the questions we have to ask ourselves in that moment is, what are the benefits to not engaging with that conflict? Because there might be situations where it is not beneficial to either party to engage in that conflict. What are the risks to not engaging with that conflict? Pastor, you already talked about what's getting in the way for me of engaging in that conflict. Is there something about me and the way I am and what I'm holding on to that stops me from trying to reconnect? And what would help? What would be helpful to be able to engage with a conflict early on before it kind of turns into this monster? So I just have a few of many, many, many possible resources, tools, thoughts that I'll share with you. If you choose to engage early on or later on, I'm advocating for early on. If you choose to engage with another person when there is a conflict between you, whether they know about it or not, expect defensiveness. There isn't a time, I don't think. I mean, if someone is a super enlightened being, it's possible, I suppose. But anytime anyone approaches me and says, I noticed that you were doing this. Whoa! I was doing what? 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 Am I in trouble? What? What? What are you talking about? Right? So it is human. It is expected. Expect a defensive reaction. There is no way to engage well enough that there will not be some defensiveness. So don't be surprised if there's a bit of a defensive reaction. And then speak from your own perspective about your own experience. Don't try to interpret for the other person what they meant when they said this thing, or what they meant when they looked like that, or when they didn't do this, or they whatever that you've noticed. Talk about, objectively speaking, what was noticeable, what is observable, and then the effect on yourself. This is what I was feeling about myself or about us. This is what I was thinking, wondering about. Speak from your own perspective. And then when that person has a chance to to tell you what was really happening for them? Believe them. Believe what they're telling you about themselves. Even if it doesn't fit with a story that we told ourselves, right? Be curious. Try to get yourself into their shoes, into what it's like to be them. It's not the same as what it's like to be me. Try to be open. And then if there's some change that's needed to help with future possible conflicts, put the problem between you and solve it together. What can we do? Okay, here's what's going on. This is what I need. This is what you need. What can we do together? How can we come up with some solutions together? Why? Because I care about you. Because I believe you care about me, and this relationship is important to us. Rather than placing blame on one party or the other, there might be responsibility that people decide they need to take. Rather than placing blame, talk about what happened. What is the effect on me? Here, what is the effect on you? And what do we need going forward?
Thanks, Lori. This maybe seems, this story this morning maybe seems like a bad news story, but as I read the passage, I realize it's not all bad news. I mean, Jesus is still at work, and at the end of the passage, we read about this ministry, this mission continuing. So Paul and Barnabas aren't able to go together anymore, but Barnabas goes with Mark one way, and Paul goes with Silas another way. And I think Jesus keeps doing this throughout the book of Acts. He keeps his ministry, his mission going, even in the midst of human brokenness, human inability. But it's not just kind of an organizational thing that Jesus is doing. He's also very much concerned with people themselves. And so I'm thankful that the Bible does not end the story, especially Paul and Mark, with Acts 15. And we get glimpses in the rest of the New Testament that actually there was a good deal of coming back together. So right at the end of Paul's life, most scholars think he's writing this letter called 2 Timothy from a jail in Rome. He's writing to someone he's mentoring, a younger pastor. He's writing to Timothy. This is 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 11. And Paul writes, "Only Luke is with me." It was sad. End of my life. I'm in jail. Only Luke is here. But get Mark, which most scholars think is the John Mark of Acts 15. Get Mark. Bring him with you because he is helpful to me in my ministry. So at one time, I didn't want to go anywhere with him, but now bring him close to me. At one time, he wasn't useful to me at all, but now he has become useful. And I think, at least for me, this is a verse of hope. Jesus at work in his church, but also Jesus at work in individual moments, individuals to bring them back together.